Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. Recording at a very secret location here in Harlem, USA. I keep saying it's an undisclosed location. I think we should probably keep it undisclosed. I don't know. What do you think, Jamal?
I agree.
Yeah, we'll
keep it on the low.
Keep it on the low. Here is my co-host, the great Jamal Murphy, to my left this time.
Great to be here, as usual.
And, Kevin Keating doing a stellar job on the sound. Still haven't given him a microphone yet. And Raisa Kelly is somewhere here doing the video. But man, we have a very, 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 very special guest, somebody I've known for a long, long time, man. And it's really quite an honor to bring him. It was really great when you could actually know somebody this long and still be friends.
Yeah.
And actually be professional.
Especially in your business.
Oh, man. Shit. Kiss, what do they call kissing? What is it? Love them and leave them? That's what we do. Anyway, my guest is a great Kenny Anderson. The legendary Kenny Anderson.
Yep.
Legend. Well, first of all, Kenny, let me just say Kenny, welcome to Bill Roden on Sports. Welcome to the show.
No, it's a pleasure, man. Jamal and Bill. You know, like you said, I pretty much knew you, known you my whole life. I'm young.
Pretty good. Yeah, you are. Well, we all get older.
Yeah.
Because somebody said, because you just had a birthday, right?
Yeah, my birthday was last week. Right. I turned 46.
See, it's unbelievable.
October 9th.
Did you cover him in high school?
Yeah. That's fact. In fact, yeah, we covered in high school. It was so unbelievable. So anyway, let me just say who Kenny Anderson is so we know who we're talking to. So Kenny Anderson, man, was some people arguably say that Kenny Anderson was one of the greatest high school players to come out of New York City. And the facts are that there are only two high school All-Americans 4 years in a row.
Right.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was in Lew Alcindor and Kenny Anderson.
Right.
Only four-time All-Americans,
right.
Freshman year, sophomore year,
right.
Junior, senior, four-year All-American. I probably picked him up probably around your freshman, sophomore year, right?
Yeah, everybody. I was getting so much coverage, Daily News, New York Post, Newsday, even I think – I knew I made it, somewhat when the New York Times, New York Times did an article on
that's
me.
Right.
As my high school coach, Karen, was like, man, it's unbelievable. It's New York Times.
that's when you arrive, right.
But I got coach so Curry. Much coverage. I got so much coverage in this city. And it was a blessing, man. It was great.
Yeah. So after that, Malloy, and then, of course, there was a hunt. He probably is also probably one of the most highly recruited basketball players coming out of New York instead of going to North Carolina, which everybody thought you were going to go to because that's where one of your mentors, Kenny Smith, went.
Right.
You chose Georgia Tech. Why'd you choose Georgia Tech?
Well, my mother.
Can you tell us the story now?
Yeah, I will. But they recruited my mother. Did a hell of a job. My mother, Bobby Crimmins from the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And my mother just felt real comfortable with him. I wanted to go to Syracuse. But my mother wanted me to go to Georgia Tech. Just was comfortable. She came. It was legal back then. She came with me on my visit to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. She didn't come to my visit to Syracuse. But we went to Atlanta and You know, they just wowed my mother, man. And my mother was like, yeah, I want you to go to Georgia Tech. I'm a mama's boy. So I'm talking about Syracuse all the way home. Man, I like Syracuse, Orange and the Carrier Dome, Pearl Washington. Right. Like, Georgia Tech got Atlanta is great. Bobby Crimmins. And you, boy, you going to Georgia Tech.
So she told you, basically?
She told me. She told me where I was going.
But right. Let me ask you a question. I mean, with all due respect to Jim Boeheim and all, yeah. I mean, I guess I could understand why people like Syracuse, but it's snowing,
yeah,
and it's like freezing, and there's nothing going on there.
Yeah, true story. I went there on my visit. It was a blizzard. Derek Coleman was there, and Sherman Douglas was a senior. Right. So I just would have stepped right in, and Billy Owens playing with those guys. I really didn't pay attention to it. It just got so much coverage. The tradition of Syracuse got me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And being in the state of New York, you know what I mean? And, being close to, you know, where I grew up at, 4 or 5 hour Big East, playing in the Garden.
That was
enough to intrigue me. But, you know, something about Coach Crimmins and Atlanta, you know, Southern Hospital. I went there, had a beautiful visit. Mm. I fell in love with Atlanta also.
Mm. Also at the time, though, well let's give your resume here so people think, well, just to let you know how great you were. So you went to Georgia Tech. But let me just say this about people. I mean, you were recruited almost since the time you were in sixth grade.
Yeah.
I mean, people started in on you when you were in sixth grade. Yeah. You were on the cover of all the New York City sports pages at 14 years old.
Yeah.
You know, then you went to Georgia Tech, which you led them to the Final Four in 1990 with Dennis Scott, Brian Oliver. It was a great team, by the way. That was a great team.
Fun team, I know that.
That was a fun team. But you guys lost to
UNLV. Larry Johnson. They was deep. They was loaded.
Yeah.
But we gave them a great game. We
that just was the ran year
out
they
of
won,
gas.
Right?
Yeah, we just ran out of gas. Right. They was pretty deep.
Yeah, right. I must tell you, that's one of the greatest college teams I've ever been around.
Yeah.
With Stacey Arnold.
It was like grown men out there.
Well, it was.
that's how it felt?
Yeah, that's how it felt. But we lost to them by like 8 points,
right,
man. We competed. We just ran out of gas. They had a deep team. And I love Larry Johnson, Greg Anthony,
right.
Stacey Ogman,
right.
Moses Skerry over here from Brooklyn. That was my guy.
The shooter, Anderson Hunt.
Anderson Hunt. That was, that's who lit us up.
Yeah, he was a killer.
You know, we held everybody else. Stacey Ogman that night, he scored on us. And he was known as a defensive specialist. But he lit us up that night and with Anderson Hunt. And everybody else we had under control, but they just did everything the right way. It was very aggressive, played defense. They played hard every possession. You don't see that in college, you know, back then, you know, right. Every possession throughout the whole game. They was really into it.
Then they beat, they went to the final, they beat Duke by 40 points.
Yeah, that's the first time.
No, 30 points.
Yeah, beat them by 30. It was a laugher.
That was great. At that time, you know, I was like, you know, Duke, man. They couldn't have beat them by enough. I want them to beat them by 150, 150 points. Man, it was not enough. Well, you play in ACC. You shouldn't have any love loss for Duke.
No, I don't have no love loss for them, but I do respect them. They won a lot. But that year, we beat them twice out of three. So we was confident if we beat UNLV that we was gonna win a championship. That would be a championship. But we had a harder. You know, they played Arkansas. Arkansas was the other Final Four team: Duke, Arkansas, Georgia Tech, and UNLV.
Yeah.
But it was a great run, man. You know, being a freshman, coming in with all the hype, and leading my team to the Final Four, and we won the ACC tournament.
Right.
We lost six. I think it was 28-6 that year. 28-6.
You guys had a great team.
Yeah.
I mean, you really had.
Now, you probably could tell me the history. You know, they called us Lethal Weapon 3. We all averaged 20. Three guys averaged 20. I don't know if it's ever been done. You know, I don't know the history.
Three
guys averaging 20.
Yeah, I don't think so. But if I say that,
somebody's
going to say, oh, yeah.
Facts. No facts check. I don't know.
1951. Maybe
we might edit that in.
We'll fact check.
But then you were – you know, you stayed another year.
Yeah.
You left after your sophomore year. Then you were the number, you got drafted by the Nets. You were their first round pick. Were you like number
one? Number two.
Number two in the draft.
Larry Johnson went one.
Yeah,
Larry Johnson. Yeah, I went number two.
Yeah, number two in the draft. I mean,
yeah.
So, and then you played in the league from 91 to 05.
Yeah.
You were All-Star in 1994. Yeah. Let me, there's so much to talk about. And your career your career has been documented.
Yeah.
Like, part of the reason why you're here in New York is because you put all this fantastic stuff in a documentary that's going to be airing next month, right?
Yeah,
airing
November 12th. You know, my documentary is called Mr. Chibs. Mm-hmm. If you know me, Queens, New York, my family members, my nickname is Chibs, C-H-I-B-B-S. So my mother, when I did something great, she called me Mr. Chibs. So I named it Mr. Chibs, and a story about Kenny Anderson, my life, my journey. It's not a highlight reel, it's not basketball, it's about life lessons and, you know, where it all began and where I'm at now. Which makes it really special because I'm still trying to find myself, work in progress. So it's I'm not finished. So it's just a great you know, story about me coming into myself after retiring, after 10 years, not knowing what I was going to do. You know, some dark times, and just, you know, reinvent myself and to be a better person. That's the main thing.
Where does the nickname Chibs come from? Chibs.
You're not listening to me.
You said Mr. Chibs. I got that.
Chibs. Yeah. Chibs?
Yeah.
My mother named me that when I was 5 days old.
Chibs. But what does it mean? It
doesn't mean anything. Uh-huh. No, I know. I'm messing. No, it doesn't mean anything. It's that, you know, when she had me, they brought me in, you know, show it to her, and her mouth was full. She said cheeks, and it came out Chibs. And I didn't know my name was Kenneth until, you know, registration for kindergarten. Because my family members and everybody call me Chibs.
Okay.
It doesn't mean anything. It's really dear to me and my mother, you know, Chibs. And when I did something positive, did work well in school, you know, played well, she called me Mr. Chibs. So she's probably rolling over in a grave because I named the documentary Mr. Chibs. It's very special. And then everybody in my neighborhood, Left Rack City, close people to me, my family and my friend, they know me as Chibs.
Again, man, you live such a fascinating, you've had such a fascinating career. And, you know, and I was so appreciative. You know, we run the sports and recreation program here at the church, and you came and talked to the kids and blew them away because they had no idea that, you know, that you were going to be coming. And some of the stuff you were saying was really life lessons. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, man, is that, so we just went over your resume. So from the time you were like in sixth grade, you were on this incredible high. Sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth, 10th, 11th, 12th, first year in college, second year, everything was great. What were you thinking, man, at that point? I mean, how great, what was it like to be Kenny Anderson in New York City, being like, I mean, from the time you were in sixth grade,
it was
like this, you know.
I just lived it, man. You know what I mean? I had great mentors and to keep me level-headed, but it was weird. Now I look back and I'm getting it. Back then, I just lived it. I was just, you know, a child playing a game I love, getting attention for it. In high school, I went to Malloy High School. I was like a nerd in high school. I played basketball, did schoolwork, played basketball, did schoolwork. I repeated that for 4 years. Had a high school sweetheart. You know, I wasn't into girls. I just was into, you know, basketball, movies. I was structured. You know what I mean?
Right.
I went to Georgia Tech and I lost it. I went Atlanta. To all boys school and I went to Atlanta and lost it.
But you're still putting up numbers.
Yeah, I was putting up numbers, but
of numbers.
Yeah, right. A lot of numbers. No, but that's really in a nutshell. That's what happened. I was my mentors, and they caged me in. This is what you do. This is what you have to do. Guys in the neighborhood, Left Rack City. Like it took that saying, it takes a village to raise a child. That's what Left Rack, they did, you know, all the guys out there did. But they was overprotective. Like I couldn't do anything. Couldn't hang out after a certain amount of hours. Late, it gets late. Hey, man, go upstairs. Somebody chasing me upstairs. It was, I was real structured. And it's weird coming, you know, living in the ghetto, in the inner city, but having a structured life.
Right.
But that was the only way I was going to make it.
But describe that more for me, like coming from, you know, there are a lot of there are prodigies.
Yeah.
They end up in the NBA.
Yeah.
But I always look at it like coming from New York City where people are gunning for me from the sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade. I remember when Marbury, I'm about Marbury's age. I remember I used to go into high school gyms. He's like in fourth, fifth grade. And they're like, oh, you're next Kenny Anderson.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the same thing. Like every year you got, I mean, New York City is huge. I feel like it's a little different.
Yeah.
you know, being a man that long in New York City?
Yeah, it was, like I said, I couldn't tell you. It was a blur. I lived through it. You know what I mean? Now I'm getting it. You know, when after I retire and you look back and these interviews and when you do show, you're like, wow, I did do that. You know what I mean? But while I was doing it, I was just doing something I love and just listening to the right people. I listened to the right people, too. You know, I wasn't taking bad advice, you know, because you can take advice from anybody.
Right.
Yeah, but you got to take the right advice. And I think I did that, and it paid off for me.
You played, you were playing with, did you play with Riverside and the Gauchos?
Yeah, I was one of the only players in the city to do that. I played with both of them.
Not simultaneously.
Yeah, no. Like, I played my last, years, I played with the Gauchos, but I started out with Riverside Church Hawks, mm-hmm. you know, with Ernie Loich, me, Malik Sealy. Mm-hmm. We grew up together playing with Riverside at like 14. Mm-hmm. We created a great team.
How'd you feel when Malik died? A lot of times, you know, again, we live these lives of young and everything is sweet and wonderful. And then there's always some point, some people comes earlier, some later, when you lose somebody. And all of a sudden, it's like, wow, what? This doesn't last forever? How did Malik's death affect? He died later.
He made the lead. He was doing well for himself. It hurt me because my mother and his mother was very close. I stay in touch with her. I call her from time to time. And when I come to New York, I try to take her to lunch and all that. But when it close to home like that, like, wow, young, and get, you know, DUI driver kills him. Yeah, that could have been me. That could be anybody. You know what I mean? So it's just it was a tragic and a real sad time to see someone with that type of potential. And he was having a great year with Minnesota. Timber. He was about to get paid. Got a good contract, and sometimes it always happened like that. When things are going right for you, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, you know, something happens. So it was really a bad time. And like I said, I still stay in touch with his mother, and it's great, always great seeing her.
Well, what prompted you to do a documentary? One of the things I'm very happy with is that a lot of brothers in the league, and not just the NBA, NFL, seems like a lot of guys now are wanting to tell their own stories.
Yeah.
Because so often, like in my generation, it was never, you know, it was usually like it was either a white documentary or a white author. It seems like now more guys want to tell their own stories. What prompted you to want to tell your own story?
I think 3-4 years ago, a documentary phase was going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know who I saw, but everybody was, I was like, you know, somebody came and said, you got to tell your story. I said, I should. So I came up with the idea of doing it and got with Jill Campbell, who's my director, who shadowed me for about 4 years. Mm. BMG Brokers, they're invested in my project with Barry Goldstein. I have an amazing team. They see the vision. They love my story. They love me as a person, you know, and they get it. And basketball was great, but it's the other things that I think will – kids will get out of this. That's the main thing. You could Google me or YouTube me and see highlights. You know, that's easy. But to really get into, you know, to me coming from the heart, giving the world, you know, hey, this is me. I'm not, you know, I got flaws. I struggled. Mm-hmm. This is what I struggled with. This is what happened. This was about, and I still made it. So you don't have no excuses. Now, you know, I'm trying to, you know, find myself to get better, to be a better husband, to be a better father, to be, you know, that person that I need to be to have a successful life. Right. Not career, but life. And that's what I'm searching for. And that's what the documentary is about. It's about the life. It's a life. It's basketball and life.
Did you learn, what'd you learn about yourself through the process?
Wow, it was some emotional moments. You know, it was like therapy for me. I'm going to therapy, you know, now. With certain things that, you know, went on in my life, with being abused and things of that nature. I'm an advocate, you know, of child molestation. I opened up. I held that in for 30-something years. That's why I was acting out and doing what I was doing, you know, especially when you get fame and money. And now you got to feel macho because that happened to you. So it's weird. And that's what me and my therapist talk about. And I go once a week. And not only for that, but just like I said, I'm just trying to, I think my mother would want it. Just be a better person, man. You know, just be there for your kids and just do the right thing. You know, we're not perfect by no means, but you can try to be a good citizen and a good person. And that's what I'm trying to, you know, You know, because we all know when we doing shit wrong. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I've done a lot of stuff wrong for many years. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you look in the mirror and you look at, I know I did, like, man, I got to cut this out.
Mm. You know, I guess where I was trying to go, like, so much, yeah, you were on a positive high.
Yeah.
And then you get drafted, mm-hmm, which is, you know, the dream.
Yeah.
Right? And I remember something that Willis Reed said, you were with the Knicks, Nets, mm-hmm, and you had to go out, and I don't think you had just gotten your license or something.
Yeah.
And so you were going out, because you had to get your license, because you just got a car. And Willis said something that, well, don't forget what allowed you to go get that car.
Yeah.
And it was, I think that was the beginning of, you know, you climbed this mountaintop and you've been doing all this stuff. You've been structured. You're doing all. Now all of a sudden you're getting paid a lot of money and all that kind of stuff. As you look back, was that the beginning of, I mean, you had a 14-year career, so clearly that wouldn't be at the end. But just in terms of, you know, there are some abuse issues.
Yeah.
There was like substance abuse issues, yeah, alcohol. There's a lot of stuff that we could talk about, but yeah, was that the beginning of, or did that even begin when you were at Georgia Tech, or was it the NBA life? When did the stuff begin start to affect
you? When I went to college, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? I left my mentors back home, and I lost the edge a little bit. I lost my work ethic a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was getting over because I was talented, and I was still doing what I was doing. Mm-hmm. But and then, you know, we started winning at Georgia Tech. I started getting a lot of fame, and started taking advantage of that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I lost a little bit of my edge, you know, my work ethic, and got to the NBA. It slowed down a little bit because my first year I didn't play much because of Bill Fitch and, you know, whatever reasons. Then my second year, I said, man, I got to, you know, do my thing once they give me the ball. So I worked, you know, got the ball, made the all-star team. And then I just was like, man, I could do this. You know, sometimes, I tell my son this, I was so talented, man. It's like I can do whatever and still go out there and perform, you know. And so it's scary, you know what I mean? It's scary. So imagine if I would have put, you know, more effort and worked more extremely hard. And I tell my son, I said, listen, I could have probably much better in the NBA if I would have really concentrated more and cut out my lifestyle. I could have probably played another 3-4 years and been effective. Mm. You know what I mean? But I just BS'd around, you know, with my talents because it was easy to me. But as you get older, your body takes toll. Young guys come in,
the
game changes, and, you know, I slow down, it changes. So it was time to do something else. But I really believe that. I don't know how many people's going to be honest with themselves. Like, I'm going to be honest because it's truth. That's how I felt. You know, I'm not, you know, taking nothing away, you know, from me. I played 14 years with some solid numbers. Right. I was an all-star. Right. Some guys play in the league ever and don't make an all-star team.
Right. Right.
And I didn't make the all-star. I started for the all-star team. So my numbers was great and everything. And I did that with a so-so work ethic in the NBA. I look back and I said, wow. Some of these guys, they talk about the point guards and things like that. If I would have been more serious with my work ethic, it would have been a joke, you know.
Well, tell you. You mentioned the abuse issue. I guess you deal with all this in the.
Yeah, somewhat. I touched it
in the phone. What? Because I never really heard that part of it before. What was that? When did the abuse take place?
Well, I was like 11 years old. You know, one time for a coach, AAU coach, lived in Brooklyn. You know, that was one time. And then when I lived in South Jamaica, you know, it was just I didn't know what it was. I knew what it was wrong.
Right.
But I thought became Kenny Anderson at that point. You know, when I come to, you know, but I became, especially Malloy, you know, at 14, All-American, best player in the city. I just threw that thing in the closet. You know what I mean? And just
you never confronted this person ever?
Nah, I couldn't find him. I stayed away from him when I was younger.
Right.
I knew who it was. I just stayed away from him because I was like, that's, you know, he weird. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I stayed away from him and told when I came out, you know, rest in peace. My mother was living, she would have flipped out, wanted to kill the dude, you know what I mean? But she was there. So some of my mentors wanted to, too. They tried to find him, but they, you know, find him. And I think he did it to some other kids also.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then I came and I was like, man, that was wrong. You know, this, I just came out. Because during the documentary, my wife and was like, yo, if you want to do something, you got to be honest and help somebody. You can't be just doing this for some media purpose. You know what I mean? Right. And that's what made me think. I was going to still hold it in. But then when I got it off my chest and got therapy, and it made me feel better.
That's so funny. I mean, how liberating. Well, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard talked about the same thing in his book, being abused. And you know, you never know about this stuff. You know, and I guess, too, because you're an athlete and that whole thing. How liberating was it? And you're talking about like it being in your 40s when you finally were able to kind of tell that story.
I felt good for me, but I felt good for other people. You know, some people was coming up to me and they was, oh, I dealt with the same thing. It's great that you know, I didn't know how to come out. From hearing it from you, it made me feel that, you know, I did a children's center in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. They flew me out and I talked at one of their luncheon. It was very you know, satisfying. I was like, wow, because grown men was coming up to me afterwards like, it's amazing, you know, that this happened to you and you came to speak about it, and guy's still dealing with it. You know what I mean? And that's the big thing, you know, because it's never too late. You know, I'm just I didn't want no money, I didn't want anything, right. I just want to help somebody. You know what I mean? And that was it, because if you could stop it early, I might have not been the type of person I was, you know, with my relationships too. That's a whole nother thing. And we ain't get into that, you know, with all my women and all my babies, my baby's mothers and all that, how I was and how I acted. You know, that comes with abuse.
Oh, really?
You gotta go to therapy and you gotta see what's, you know, hurt people, hurt people.
Right.
Wow. Because it's so interesting. You know, we had Shamiqua Hosko on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was going into, and what we think we were talking about, particularly in our community, in the Black community, mental health issues, we don't deal with that. We don't, it's almost like a sense of weakness, like you're not going to therapy. That we don't do that. And if there's any group of people who need to go to therapy, it's Black people. I mean, really. But that, what she was saying, even in her situation, and Ron Artest, and then the better you are as an athlete, it continues to get masked, because we could just kind of, you know, because he's Kenny Anderson, he's so and so, and so you just kind of let it slide, and then it gets to the breaking point when the celebrity can't help you. At some point, you got to deal with this stuff.
Yeah, definitely, and it's ironic. My wife, you know, for 10 years, she's the CEO of Mental Behavior Hospital in Hollywood. So she deals with that every day on her job, but it gets worse, you know, if you don't get help. Like I said before, hurt people. My relationships, I was very abusive. I'm not talking about physically, but I was verbally abusive because I seen it done to my mother. And it's a cycle, you know what I mean? And it almost ranged to physically abuse with certain women, but it didn't go there. But it's easily, you know, you flare up, and I don't want my kids around that. You know what I mean? Because I don't want them to grow up, my sons especially, thinking that it's okay to put your hands on a woman and verbally abuse them. So I had to get help, you know what I mean? And I got help. And being entitlement, you know, when you're sick, you know, mentally, certain things, and then you're Kenny Anderson, you're famous and all that. I'm Kenny Anderson, what you talking about? I can do whatever I want to do. You know what I mean? That's not a good look either. And it really can hurt you.
That's fair, because we're talking about, we'll go with you.
No, I mean, obviously it's something you had to deal with, but could you pinpoint it as you're going on with your life, or was it just some kind of subconscious thing you knew you were dealing with?
My relationships, I knew what it was going through, because every woman, every relationship I dealt with, it was going through the same stuff. So I'm like, it's me. You know, I'm always, and I own up to stuff, and, you know, I understand when it's me, you know what I mean? And I'm not going to lie and say it's not, but that's just the way I was. And I got to get help. I got to change this, because I don't like when my mother passed away too, and she told me, we were sitting on the edge of the bed about 3 months before she passed, 4 months, she was just like, you got to change.
Really?
I remember that. It's eerie. You got to change. You're not my chibi no more. You know what I mean? She said, you're not chibi. It was serious. And me and my mother had a real strong talk in our house. She said, you got to change. You retired. You
You got a great brand. You've been doing this thing since you was 11 years old. You're gonna fuck it all up. You gotta change. You gotta stop drinking. You gotta stop arguing and being abusive to these women. You gotta stop having babies. You gotta change. And that's why I keep, you know what I mean? She said, you can do this. You got a great brand, but you're going to fuck it all up if you don't get your life in order.
That seeped through.
I was retired, I was finished. So I was like, you know, what I'm going to do? You know, if your brand is messed up and that's what I built it, you know, all up, you know, I'm not working for no company, I'm not a corporate type guy. I went back and got my bachelor's after 20 something years at St. Thomas University down in Miami, but I'm just trying to make a career out of certain things. I'm like, man, what do I have? I have Kenny Anderson. Right. If I got to reinvent myself, I got to be a better person. I got to do this for myself, for my family.
You know, there are two things, man. Well, the one, when you were talking about the women, I'm thinking about Donald Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's exactly what we're talking about now. So when you see all this, man, you must be like deja vu, and I know exactly what's going on here. What are you thinking about when Trump is doing exactly the same thing, right, with the women, the entitlement, the abuse?
Yeah, it's like really real. Like, I didn't tell anybody, but when I hear all this Trump stuff coming out, I'm just thinking out loud. I'm thinking, that's easily could have been me. I don't touch. I didn't grab. You know, man, none of that. That's nonsense. I'm not going to grope a woman, and I don't know a woman, just because I'm Kenny Anderson. Right. Never did that. Right. But, you know, there's times where you talk to a woman, introduce yourself, you get to know a woman, you get comfortable with the woman, then you go there. Mm. But I'd never be like, just grab and assault a woman. That's the wrong thing to do. That's trash. That's not locker room talk.
Right.
I played in the league for 14 years. And first of all, the woman and the sex thing is off limits. Really, it's really private. You know, nobody's going to come in. You ain't going to sit next to your guy in the locker room. Hey, man, you know, I saw that chick at the ball. I grabbed her pussy and shit.
Right.
She all be, she wanted, you know. Yeah, I'm going to go. We don't talk like that, no.
Right, right.
No locker,
what
locker, that?
What locker room do you go to?
Right.
And I'm like, if you see, even if someone was talking like that in the locker room, he'd be that one dude.
He'd be a one by himself. Yeah, and people probably alienated. Away from like this guy.
This guy's crazy.
You don't talk like that. The personal sex life and all that, even with your woman, that's off limits in a locker room.
Right.
You might say, hey, man, I seen you with the chick last. She looked good.
Right.
Yeah, man, I'm trying to get up on it. Boom.
Right. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
But that stuff is like nuts. But when you are, and I say, when he said one thing that made a lot of sense, he entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Kenny Am. I'm the number two pick.
Right.
I'm a millionaire. What's up? You don't know me? Come on, let's go. What's wrong with you? Get with me.
That was
my rap right there. Bill, that was my rap.
That's it.
Who are you? I'm Kenny Anderson, number two pick.
That's
it. Millionaire. What's up? You ready to roll?
And I guess the bizarre thing is, A, that you're fucked up for saying it, but then again,
that's real.
I guess it takes two to tangle. Like, somebody says, okay, that sounds good to me.
Talking is fine. You get to know a woman. I'm never abusive of a girl. I'm not insulting grabbing a woman, but talking and trying to figure out. And if she bite on that, she a gold digger. You know what I'm saying? Like, if she bite on that conversation. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I mean, but I guess this gets so fascinating because I was talking to Grant or somebody. I couldn't even imagine, you know, in other words, it's hard enough to find love just to be an average, no money kind of guy.
Yeah.
I wonder how it must be that once you get the NBA, and how do you determine who loves you? I mean, how do you determine to get a real relationship, or is it just kind of fuck it? It's all just like a battleground. I mean, how do you determine?
I'm wondering if it goes both ways. Like, maybe if they're coming at you, you're going to use that line. You know? You hear it enough. That's what they're coming at you for.
I was joking. Like, me is the joke. Like, certain women is, you know, I'll, you know, go after them or whatever.
Right.
But that, like, listen, that's not the woman you want to marry. That's not somebody, if she bite on that. You know, you never know. But you got to trust somebody.
Right.
Like, I got married at 23, 24. I should have listened to my mother. That's the only time I didn't listen. You know, my wife, my first wife, Tammy, she, you know, got two of my beautiful daughters. I would never, you know, belittle her and all that, but I just wasn't ready to be married in my prime, you know, playing in my hometown, New Jersey, right. 23, 24 years old. Everything was thrown at me. I didn't take marriage serious. I went into my marriage wrong. Like, anything. I just divorced her, right. Got a prenup, move on. Mm-hmm. That's my mentality.
Right. Right.
You can't have that mentality. You know what I mean? So, you know, you can't, you don't know. You don't know, but I do know my third wife. I do know this. You know, I like to say my wife, we eat cold cuts and beans out of can. I could throw with her.
Right.
Because when I met her, I was on my way out the league. And I was going through a lot. And she was rolling with me. You know what I mean? Regardless. That I knew. You know, that's my ride or die chick right there. She's a winner.
10 years.
13 together.
13 years.
Wow. Now I'm married.
Did you ever say that I'm not getting married again? I mean, do you ever say this?
Yeah, this one is rough. You know, it's rough. Meaning you build so much together, you got kids, you got foundation. But you know, I say that, but I'm the type of dude, and I don't know if it's wrong. My family. I just type. I think because I was a mama's boy, and my sisters spoiled me. I'm the type that need a woman around. You know, I need a woman around to do certain things that I, you know, prefer. And I'm not talking about sexual or nothing like that. I'm just talking about, take care of me. I always was that type of guy. Now, my best friend is an independent guy. He, you know, he comes, goes, got relationships, and that's it. But I'm the type that I need a woman around me. So I'm probably always going to stay married.
That's interesting. I guess his knowledge itself is very interesting. How much, you know, there's so many ways to go here, but you're not blaming, for example, you know, some people blame the NBA or the AAU culture or the culture of stardom, whether it's NBA. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could blame that, but I guess at the end of the day, it's you. I mean, you know, not everybody does that, but I mean, is there, you've seen the AAU culture. I don't know if you think it's gotten worse.
Yeah, I think it got worse with the sneaker companies, the people with money, the corp, you know, they're exploiting some of the great talents, the one and done players. They're not teaching them anything, all this entitlement. So it's hurting them a little bit as they get older and as they get in the game. But I don't blame anyone. I've done whatever I've done, faults and made mistakes through myself. That's me all over, you know. God gave me a gift to play basketball at a young age. And like I always tell, I got it early. I got it early. And it's a gift and a curse. If I had to do it all over, I'd do it the same way. I got it early, and I held up. I know some people that got it early and retired, play 14 and be on drugs, lose everything.
Right. Didn't make the league.
Yeah, or didn't make the league. I did pretty well, man. You know, and it's really after my mother's passed away. I got a good family. My kids is all right. I live modest now, but I live very well. I'm very well. I don't want for anything. Whatever I need to try, I travel. I'm fine. You know what I mean? Am I 50 million and, you know, million and different? No, but I don't need that because I lived that life already and I enjoyed it.
Immensely.
Yeah, but Bill, what you had to say, don't blame no one. Everything I did it on my own. Right. You know what I mean? When I didn't work as hard as I should have worked, when I dated and cheated on my wife and did all that stuff, you know, you got to be able to be honest with yourself to better yourself. Because if not, you're going to keep thinking everything is fine. You know when you start lying, then you start believing your lie after a while. You know when you lie so much, after a while, you're like, yeah.
That's who you are. Right?
Yeah.
Right. So, hey, our guest is the great Kenny Anderson. His documentary is Mr. Chibs, and it's going to drop November
12th.
November 12th. Check it out. Tell everybody. Tweet it out. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back. We're going to talk about the light side. There's plenty of light in this career.
Man. I'm just thinking about what we just talked about in the first segment.
Like,
it's
side.
All dark, man.
Hey, man.
But it's all
We're educational programs.
Yeah.
if you can listen through it. But no, we're going to come back. We talk about a lot of good stuff. We'll be right back. Everybody, we're back. Wow. We're back at Harlem, USA. Bill Roden on Sports here with Jamal Murphy and with our guest, the great Kenny Anderson. I said, man, for the break, you know, let's talk about some light stuff. And realistically, man, I mean, even though what we were saying, we were talking about real life stuff.
Right.
Yeah, you know, real life stuff. But you know, we keep forgetting that, number one, you had a great career, great life, you're here, great family. Right. Do you have a good relationship with your kids? Your children?
I'm trying, man. I got 8 kids. You know, my son and daughter lives with me in Florida. When they spread out, it's tough. But they're older. My oldest live in Atlanta, and my daughters is 2 years apart. I got 26, 24, 22, 20.
Wow.
And then my daughter lives with me at 16. Wow. And then my 2 sons in Northfield, New Jersey. So it's been pretty tough, the distance. But they come and visit me in Florida from time to time, things like that. But I wasn't in their lives every day like I am with the 2 that lives with me, my son Kenny and Tiana. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But, you know, being a father is tough, man. You just worry about your kids.
Right.
Nothing, you know, just 24 hours, like where they at, what they're doing. Mm. You know, they're making the right choices. Mm. And it's just tough, man.
It's so funny. I had this conversation with Allen Iverson when he was coming out with his documentary.
Yeah.
And it was so fun. The conversation was so funny.
Because,
you know, he was Mr. Cutting Edge.
Yeah, yeah.
He missed this. So then he was talking about his relationship with his daughter.
Yeah.
And how protective he was of his daughter. And said, you know, and she said, he said, I went so far to protect her, and she wanted to go on her own. I said, you can't go on. How are you going to deal with guys like me? You're not prepared to deal with guys like me.
Which is crazy. The daughter's attracted to guys like their father.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I go through, you know, with my oldest daughter. She likes guys. I got 5, so my 2 oldest just different, night and day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one like a thug, rough, you know, my older, then my 24-year-old, you know, like nice, clean cut, corporate, you know, things. So it's different, you know.
Sometimes when you're a guy and you have daughters, you sing, please God.
Oh, that's.
I hope this is.
I'll do that every night.
Haunting me.
I'll do that every night. Sweat, karma,
sweat.
Like when I put people through, when I put some of them girls, put through some of them women through, I was like, God, please, don't be so hard on my daughters, please.
But how are you with your daughters? Are you the type that try to keep it extra real? Or you try to.
I keep it real. I'm real with my daughters. To tell them about guys like me and guys out there in general, but they just, dad, stop it.
Right.
You know,
it's true. Yeah. It's real.
Yeah, it's real, but they're great kids. I'm lucky right now, you know, with my kids. No one's on drugs or going crazy. It seems like they got a focus, and I just want them to keep them because as you get older and you go through peaks and valleys of your life, you know, sometimes you make those bad decisions. You know, when adversity struck, that's when we see what type of your character. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, it's about. But you know, hopefully they strong right now.
Mm-hmm. What was the greatest time when you look back at your NBA career? What was the? I know there are a lot of highlights. What was it? Sort of the highlights of your NBA career?
I go back. My first 6 years in high, my first 4 years in high school, my first 2 years in Georgia Tech was my best time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, if Malloy was the best time. And Georgia Tech 2 years was the best. NBA, I really had no highlights. Making an all-star team, and I really didn't, you know what I mean? It was great reaching the pinnacle, playing the best in the world, athletes, and getting money, and, you know, being able to take care of my mother. But that, I got drafted when I made it to that pinnacle. I was like, yes, now I can take care of my moms. But throughout it, it changes, you know what I mean? Because, you know, that's the game I love. I probably would play the game I love for free. Mm-hmm. Now you get money. So now when money's involved, it's a lot of politics that you don't have no control. You don't see it early. Then you be like, oh, this is what this is about.
Mm.
2, 3, 4 years in.
For example, just what didn't you know? What didn't you know in the first couple of years? And all of a sudden you're 6, 7 years. Shit. You know, if I would have knew that then.
No, nothing bad, but it's just corporate work. Like, far as, you know, playing minutes, and some guys got contracts with a certain amount of minutes they can play, and if they don't make the minutes, so the coach won't play them minutes. Coach don't like the player that the GM signed, he won't play. It's because it's a business. It's not like you killing this dude in practice, and I should be playing, right? It ain't that easy. You know, before high school, you know, bitty ball, AAU ball, all that, the best is going to play. No, it's different in the league. It's in the politics, and you wonder, you know, like you see guys that's very good. You say, damn, why are you sitting on the bench? It's more to it than that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So the word I can use is a lot of politics that you don't have no control over.
Would you say you didn't have fun in the NBA?
I had fun at times. I had fun at times. I could never say I didn't have fun. But, you know, it was a job. You know what I mean? It was a job around people that sometimes I tend to question, you know, do they care about me? Mm. You know what I mean? Or they just, you know, I know the coaches didn't. One or two did, but coaches, they were trying to save their job. They want to win games. So as long as you playing well, you've been out there winning games so they can keep their job, they cool. That's the bottom line.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And by no means that I'm saying it's wrong or right or I'm mad. Is. It is what it is.
Right. You know what I mean? Everything. Yeah. Listen, journalism.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, law. Whatever it is, what it. Yeah. And it's funny. Somebody, once you get paid for something,
that is.
Once you get paid, when you do it for free, you know, high school, college. You know, once it's a job, I think a lot of guys don't. This is a job. Okay. I was thinking somebody even at the Times, which was I was there for 34, 35 years. I had a wonderful career. Then at the end, it's okay. We're gonna give a going away, whatever, and it's our pass. You know, because it was a job.
Yeah.
It's a job I love, but it was a job. I didn't come in every day. This was where I stayed.
Yeah.
And when it was over, it was over.
Yeah.
You know, but it is a job. You know, and I think that we associate fun and games
with the NBA because of the luxury of it, and right. They don't see what goes in between that, you know, before the games, the practices, how hard you got to work on your body. And I really, nowadays, these players, I tip my hat off to them. Mm. I respect them a great deal. These new stars are awesome because they're going around traveling with their trainers, eating a diet, the right food.
Right.
They live and breathe basketball to stay on top of their game. Man, guys in the 90s, I was eating, staying out all night, eating what I wanted to eat, going to practice, working out when I had to work out. But it wasn't, you know, I'm not saying everybody did, but these guys are real. Kobe Bryant, take my hat off to them. And the pros that all is about the guys that's consistent,
right?
They do it the right way.
What changed? You think it was the players who changed, or was it, you know, was there more of a support system? Is there more of a support system now than there was before?
I don't know about that. You know, can't blame you. Like, I know one thing, these one and done, and these young guys coming in with all that money, they're going to face problems because they're young.
You know what I mean?
At times. You know, I think you look at, like, Dwight Howard, some of the stuff he's going through from high school right to the pros, he hasn't had time to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So certain issues, certain things he deal with, he don't know how to deal with them. You know, he come right out of high school making millions of dollars. That can be hard for some kids if they're not ready with it, you know, ready for it. You know, I just think it's who the person is, you know. Mm-hmm.
What about the 2 years you spent at Georgia Tech? You talk about guys who come straight into the league or the one and done. You think that those 2 years did something for you?
Well, my 2 years, I didn't want to leave my 2 years. I wanted to stay just cool till my junior year, but my coach did the research and said, yo, you going 1, 2, or 3,
right.
You got to go. You know what I mean? I was having so much fun in college. It was no pressure. You fear what you don't know on the other side. You know, I know talently I was ready, talent-wise, but not physically I wasn't ready.
In retrospect, would you have stayed? I mean,
yeah.
I mean,
I would have stayed. So I know it's weird. People say, the money. I was comfortable in Georgia Tech. I had what I needed. I ate every day. I got, you know, they was taking care of me.
You might have dropped 35 a game.
Yeah. I don't know, but.
You took a pay cut.
That's what they said the joke was. But I just wasn't in no rush.
Right.
But my coach was like, you got to go, take care of your family, this, that, and the other. So, you know, it was that. But, you know, it's just going to the NBA and after 1, 2 years, 3 years, it's a job, and it's got to be work. You got to work. You got to take care of yourself. You got to prepare yourself, be consistent, because you got the city, you got the organization, you got your fans, you know, looking at you to perform on a high level.
Mm.
And during your pro career, what was your – we talked about this a little bit off air. What was your relationship like with the journalists and the fans?
You know, me, I was never hard on. My mother said, hey, man, you Kenny Anderson, if you get those people some ammunition, they're going to bury you. So do everything in your power to keep it clean and do the right thing, and then you'll be fine. You know what I mean? But I didn't do that all the time, and you deal with it. I don't take it personal. I might for the minute. You know, I think after my fourth year, I stopped reading papers and magazines and bringing them in my house. Nobody could do it. I just stayed away from newspapers and articles, or all my friends or somebody would tell me, like, oh, did you go say this? I said, oh, okay, cool. But I'm not one of those players that's after shoot around on the bus with that article about right. me. With that, I stayed away from it after my third year, third, fourth. I stopped reading.
Right. Now you got social media. I mean, could you imagine? Now it's crazy. Now it's
instantaneously. I'd be in trouble when I'm in the league. I don't know how that – I talk about that a lot on social media. I'll be in trouble. Half of the guys in the league would be in trouble with social media in the 90s.
Oh, you mean in terms of what they did or what they
– whatever. Like, you couldn't
– right.
It's a gift and a curse.
Mm-mm-mm. So you like the league now? You like the NBA?
Yeah, I love the league. I'm a big fan. I think it's great for the NBA. It's a billion-dollar business. It's the players is awesome. Top players is awesome. I think it's watered down, but I think the stars are awesome
because of the young guys.
Young guys and some guys I just don't think in certain. In our era, I think the 90s. I think the role players and the guys was better. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't the teams. It's about four or five good teams in the NBA that you probably would build. You answer that. How many teams you think is really good teams in the league
now,
that you would go and see?
Oh, I'm a sports writer. I don't go see anybody.
I know you have to, but if you would put yourself on
fan. I mean, I go to see Golden State.
Right.
And now here's
Cleveland.
Cleveland. You go to here seeing San Antonio, as much as I think that's boring. You go see San Antonio. And then it depends on who's hot in a particular week or in a particular couple of months.
So I just think the teams is just watered down, but the product and the logo and all that is big now. It's huge. And the TV revenue deals, and it's just awesome.
What about the athletes, you know, in general, or specifically the athletes? You see all the stuff going on now, Kaepernick in football.
Yeah.
And then even the NBA players, like, you know, they're you know, locking arms. And what do you think about all that?
I think it's great, but everybody like I said, everybody protests the way they want to protest. You know what I mean? You know, I think Kaepernick is great. I respect him. You know, he's standing up for the oppressed people. There's a lot of injustice going around in this world, and he made a stand. He made people aware. Mm-hmm. Like I tell you, now we're aware.
Right.
Now what else? What are we gonna do now?
Right.
Right.
And me, I'm sometimes real critical and. You know, maybe negative sometimes, my wife say, but, you know, I think it's just so deep. A lot of hate and racist is so embedded in some people that I just think it's not, I think it's too late. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. What we could do? You got to go into these communities. The guys that's, especially in the lead, LeBron's and the Kevin Durant, step, go into the communities and do things a little more. You know, I know they do it from time to time, but that's all. I think in the bad neighborhoods, you got to go in there and give them kids some hope. That's what I've been doing, you know, since I retired. The basketball clinic is fine, but I also want to give them my, you know, my life story to try to give them some hope. And I think we got to do that spread throughout the world. Mm. You know what I mean? And not so much basketball, but just tell them it's a better way. A lot of us is uneducated, we just uneducated, you know, different issues in life. That's why I don't talk too much about certain things that I'm not aware of, that I'm not educated on, because it make you look like an idiot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So there's things that, you know, we have to respect, but at the same time, it's like, okay, we doing all of this. Like I said, now what? Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? I don't know. You know, I don't have the answer, the solution. I think it's just too deep.
But, you know, we talked about this a lot. You can only do what you can do.
Yeah,
so if you're with the New Jersey Nets and you look around and there ain't no black folks working in the organization in terms of secretaries, then you can say, you know what, I may not be able to end poverty in Newark, but I can get some black folks hired here if I'm the star of the team. Or my agent, and one day I go visit my agent, you ain't got no black folks working for you. Now, here I'm your agent, and you making money off of me, and you ain't got no black folks in your state. Now, that I can change.
Yeah.
I can change what I can change using my leverage. I can't change poverty in the South. But in my organization, in my industry,
one by one, I see everybody.
Then I could change that. There's you know
a,
what I'm saying? Yeah,
there's an old saying, Al McGuire said it. You go into the ghetto, you help one kid, that kid leaves, and he might come back and help another two kids.
Right.
And that's a slow process, but that's the process that works
right.
somewhat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I understand what you said. You hit it right on the nose. Certain things and the organizations, all the NBA teams, got to look at what you just said.
Yeah. The NFL, you know, if you don't do that, in other words, I think that whenever we're talking about, well, what's next? Well, that's what's next. If you Colin Kaepernick and all that, then that's what's next. Mm-hmm. You know, you could get broad, but like, look in your own organization. Look at your own apparel company. Look at your own thing. Are they doing the right thing by your people? And if they're not, then you make them do it. If they are, then everybody goes to the beach. But, you know, that's the kind of thing.
Now, I think just with the social media and the technology, this all is, it's been quiet hate for hundreds of years, but now, it's out there now, the audio, social media. Now, everybody is getting put on blast, you know, for the racists. Right. But that's been out.
Now we know.
And I always wonder how athletes think about it. Like, you know, there's racists out there, a lot of them, right? And let's say you're playing and the crowd is pretty much 90% white, and you've got to know that they don't really respect you as a person, that they cheering hard for you. How do you?
Oh, that's just interesting because my mother said this, and she always said it when I was getting all this fame and all that. She said, "You just remember, you just a special end.
Right.
You will always be a special end. You got to use that to your advantage." Mm.
Did you believe it when she said it?
Yeah, I understood what she was saying. That's why they like you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's why they do stuff for you. That's why they try to do this. This why they doing that. You know, she used to tell me that. Now. It's really hitting home. Like, I see the world. Like, wow, this is really serious.
Right.
So, and I understand what you said, but it's real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's nothing you could do. You know, and a lot of us athletes, especially the NBA, the big, the my syndrome. You're like, me, I'm making $40 million. I ain't messing up my, I got to take care of my family.
That's right.
I got mine. Yeah, I got mine. What you expect them to do, though?
Right.
You know, but, I'm not knocking them, but some people don't want to do that.
It actually seems like the less a guy is making, like you look in the NFL, like the linebacker, Brandon Marr, all the guys who are kneeling are the guys making the least amount of money.
Yeah.
When you would think that the guy's making the most money.
How about all the quarterbacks, all the black quarterbacks rally around
Kaepernick?
That's what I'm waiting for.
Right. Instead of saying...
I respect them.
Right.
I respect. If I was there, I'd rally with them.
Right.
You know? How about Russell?
Right.
How about
right.
Seattle, the Russell? How about it?
Right. How about it?
Cam
was almost like.
I'm just saying, man. I'm not. But he needs, you know, everybody's starting to do their own thing. But in that profession, your leaders are usually quarterbacks.
That's right.
How about all the black ones do that, you know,
say he's our man.
Yeah.
This is our guy.
Because they like, nah, I ain't messing up my endorsements, my money.
Right. And that, you know.
And I get it.
But. Right. Yeah. I mean, our thing in this country has always been from day one survival.
That's
you be in the plantation and all that. And you may say, hey, listen, brother, you know, we talk. It's okay. I'm going to help you as much as I can. But, you know, it's like, you know, if you escape and fuck up, they're going to burn my shit down, you know. But so, that's reality, you know.
Yeah.
But you had different people. You had like some people said, you know, even on the plantation, we're going to burn the whole shit down. Some people said, hey, man, I'm going to be Uncle Tom. I'm just telling you right now. Don't tell me no shit. You don't want them to know.
I'm warm in here. I'm eating three meals. This food is good.
Right.
I ain't going out there.
Emancipation, proclamation. What are you talking about? I got to go to his job.
I mean,
it's funny, but our reality has always been different people, different ways of protest, and we've always had to be very respectful of that. Uncle Tom, the cat who's going to kill everybody, the cat who, you know, I'm not mentioning the name, but me and my friends joke about who certain people are relative to the struggle. So some people, the four of us are here, we plot an escape, right? Now, some people, we just ain't going to invite. Right, we know this guy. Now, some people may be there, and they won't tell, But when we finally escaped to New York for freedom, they will already be there. But they will be the ones to hook us up with the apartments and the house. You know, they won't tell on us, but they'll just be entrepreneurial enough to know that when you get there.
You straight.
Yeah, but.
But don't put me in with y'all. Don't put me in with y'all.
I ain't going to be running through the mud. So, I mean, and I mean that's kind of in the NBA, NFL, where there are a lot of it. But I do think, though, man, and this kind of gets, you know, a far field from a little bit of the document and all that, but that is a reality, man. You have to be the reality of struggle. And what you were saying is that, what can I do? What's next?
See, what I do is, like what you do every Saturday with your program, I love doing. I'll come in, speak to the kids, tell them my struggle, tell them my life. Let's go over basketball, speak to them, advise them, tell them some stories, hang out with them. They like the basketball stories. Get to them, you know. And I've done that all over in different cities, New Jersey, Atlanta, New York. And I think just spreading my experiences to the youth. You know, and maybe to catch one or two kids, maybe one of the kids that on, today that I came and spoke, he'll catch what I was saying and then help him. But on a small token, that's what I could do. I'm not in the lead no more, but I still have a certain platform that I could use, and that's what I try to do to help our people. But, you know, I think also it starts with the household too.
Right.
It's a cycle there with African Americans, teaching our kids better education wise about different issues.
Right.
You know, about, you know, authority and about, you know, living the right way and doing things the correct way and just the whole realm. You know, I didn't live in I lived in a dysfunctional home and still made it out because I had mentors. Mm. But I was also telling you about the mentors. Nowadays, there's no more good mentors in the communities. They all taking advantage of the young kids, exploiting them to hold guns and do drug runs and do all type of things. You know what I mean? Mm. So our mentors was always on us about education, about bettering ourselves in basketball, about, you know, get off these streets, you know, you know, don't be out here all night. You know, things might happen. There might be a shootout out here. They was concerned, you know, with those, you know, who had a talent. You know, my neighborhood, I know. So it's just, that's what you could do is just, you know, hit, you know, different things with the youth. I believe the youth, it starts with the youth.
Our guest is great Kenny Anderson. The documentary is Mr. Chibs. It drops November 12th. And I want you to see it, tweet it out. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with our last segment, and we're going to talk about retirement, you know, life after basketball. And you're only 46 years old. So a whole bunch of life to live. So we're going to be right back.
I want to get your age.
This cat. Hey, we're back with Bill Roden on Sports. Jamal, what's going on, man?
Murph. I'm chilling, man. You know, hit up this Knicks game.
I was down at A&T, by the way. So Jamal went to North Carolina A&T.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I went to Morgan, which was like kind of our rivals. You know, I tell everybody probably, you know. So I played football at Morgan. And so we had this 23-game winning streak. When I went to Morgan, I was like, you know, freshman, 18. And Morgan hadn't lost a game in 3 years. And I'd never been around a group of black men who had that kind of confidence. We came in, man, cats just had this swagger, and the shit never got to the coach because it's old guys who said, man, we don't do that shit here. That's not who we are. So this whole thing, we went right here down here to Yankee Stadium, beat Grambling 9-7, one of the greatest games ever played, 24 straight, beat Norfolk State. Now we go into A&T, North Carolina A&T. And, man, that's the first time I saw, man, we must have scored about three times. Each colleague called it back. Oh, his knee hit the ground. His knee. And I'm like sitting there. I'm like, I can't believe this. And they said, this is what they call. So finally, they beat us. They beat us 7-6. Broke a winning streak and that kind of stuff. So anytime anybody tells me
it
I
hurts.
Went to A&T,
it hurts.
I just kind of look at him. In fact, Jamal, you know, knew his dad and all that. And yeah, my son, he goes to school, A&T. I said, what?
Hey, man, I'm sorry. You know?
Still. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, but, I don't know why.
Sometimes you have bad memories, man. You just got to get over it.
Yeah, I did. I was on the camp. Obama was there. President Obama was there. on campus, and we were in the same kind of auditorium, and it was very uplifting. But there's no question at all I can add. I was just riffing.
Yeah.
But listen, man, before we let you roll, you know, we talked before about retirement, mm-hmm. and I don't know about you, I left the Times in July, and you know, I was there for, you know, 34 years and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know how you feel, but it's like, I mean, I would be working with the Undefeated and ESPN. But
awesome.
The idea of retiring, is like, what do you do next? In particular, I'd imagine for an NBA player, you've been playing ball all your life since you were like in fourth grade. Now, all of a sudden, you ain't playing ball no more. So what's that been like?
It's been ups and downs, but I love it. You know, I had a great career. I love the NBA. I love all the relationships and all the players that I met along the way. When I look at the games, and I can't wait till the season start. I always bring back memories when I see the Celtics playing at home. I remember we played in the Garden, the Nets, just different emotions. Mm-hmm. But me, I'm trying to find something that I'm passionate about. It's always working with the youth and working with kids. Mm-hmm. I think I've been blessed where I don't have to, you know, work for a check. Mm-hmm. You know, some people just got to go somewhere and just, I'm working and they're miserable. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I wanna go to work happy every day and know that I'm doing something and it's going to make me, you know, feel, it's going to reward me. It's going to make me feel good. And I just think that's my calling is just dealing with the youth in some form or fashion.
You interested in coaching at all?
I thought I train kids now. I got the clinic out in Tampa that my face is on. I do the breakfast club workouts every Saturday with Kenny Anderson. Mm-hmm. I love doing that. I'm not sure. If the right opportunity comes, you know, I'll look into it and may take it. But coaching, it depends. It definitely will have to be high school or college.
Right.
You know, if I get an NBA job, it'd be something where, like, I would love to be a player development. Well, I'm just working with the players, just player development, something like that. Just giving off some of my life lessons and trying to help these kids to do the right things and that not fall into some of the pitfalls I made. You know what I mean?
You did the one little stint in high school. How did you like that?
Oh, I loved it. Stint. I loved it at Posnack. You know, I got a lot of coverage for the school. And then I got a DUI. That was my first offense in 20 years, but my name was too big, and I got the DUI, so I just had to step down because it was just a lot of hate. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I understood it. Right. You know what I mean? And that was my mistake, and I that hurts me to this day because I let those kids down.
Mm-hmm.
But that was about 5 years ago, and you know, I learned my lesson.
Did you like
the
experience?
I loved it. Loved it. The kids responded to me well, and it helped me. I think after a lot of guys that play well in the NBA, that great players don't know how to teach the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me. You know, I coached in the minor leagues, and the CBA, and it helped me. It was just like rehearsal for me to practice on coaching kids, not just basketball, but in life also. Those guys responded to me very well. I was happy with it.
You're always welcome up here.
Yeah. If I was in New York, I'd be up here every day just stopping by. You know, give them my two cents.
Yeah,
just
be
try
great,
to reach the kids and help them out. But I know when I'm in town, I know when the program, I'm going to stop by.
Do you check out Malloy at all? You keep in touch over there?
Yeah, Malloy. You know, I love Malloy. I usually go it's the weekends. But during the week, if I come, I always stop, see the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
The Malloy means a lot to me, you know. My favorite math teacher, Miss Longerano, is still over there after 20-something years.
Wow.
I love it.
Coach Curran.
Coach Curran passed, but Malloy's still standing. It's two gyms now, and girls and boys.
The gym that Kenny Anderson built.
Yeah, they got another gym, then it's girls in there. I went to Malloy when it was all boys. So.
And they got Cole Anthony
Greg Anthony's son. Yeah, he's a baller.
Yeah.
So we look good now. They got Moses, the big kid.
Right.
So we back on the map.
Hey, listen, Kenny, man, this has been great, man. You coming by. To do the show, but to talk to the kids was priceless. I mean, you got through. There are a couple of kids who are leaning on every word, you know.
Bill, I always looked at you like a educated black man. You know, when you did some articles for me and the Times and everything, and I watch you on Sports Report, so I always had the utmost respect for you, and that's the main thing. I just thought he's an educated black man, you know, in this corporate world, holding his own. So I respect you for that.
Hey, brother, thank you very much, man. I appreciate it, and we'll continue to go on. And you know, that's really what all this thing is about, man. Is people helping people, giving encouragement to people, because it's a struggle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a struggle. And if we don't really encourage each other and let people know when you're doing a good job, you know, you have to let each, we don't do that enough, I don't think. I remember talking to Robert Parrish once about, not basketball, but Serena and Venus, and how we don't really give each other props enough, how we don't tell each other, you know, man, you really did some great stuff. I mean, wow, you really, Jamal, you really did a great job today, you know. But seriously, we don't tell each other that enough. So all that's appreciated, man. Have really admired your career, admired just how you've, you know, you've had your challenges, but how you've met the challenges, haven't backed away from the challenges. And that's the thing. Nobody pitches a perfect game. I mean, that's, you know, everybody gives up. If you could, if your line could read, you know, you know, 8 innings pitched, gave up 9 runs, but won.
Right.
You know, bottom line, he's got the W, you know. I'm not trying out here trying to pitch no-hitter. I mean, that's just too hard.
Yeah, it's very hard.
You know, but hey, man, much respect, Kenny.
Yeah, thank you.
Good luck down the way. Congratulations.
Yeah, I want you to come.
The documentary.
I did it. What, West 23rd Street Theater, 23rd and 8th.
Okay.
Premiere November 12th, Saturday night at 9:45. I'm very excited. Tell my story. See, the, let the world see it, man. It's going to be great.
That's great. Well, tweet this out. Tweet this out to all your social media, and no, man, I'm looking forward to it.
Jamal, thanks, man.
Nah, thanks for coming on.
Even though he thought you were me.
Yeah,
at first.
Hey, thanks so much, Jamal, Kenny Anderson, Kevin Keating. I know it's gonna sound great. Right, you saw me the camera. Thanks so much, and thanks everybody. And we'll see you next week. God bless.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. Our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.